Welcome in to You're the Cure right here on AM 580 with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. Of course, check out the website veritasmedical.com. Past archived programs, you can certainly go there and listen to those. veritasmedical.com. Let me say good morning once again to Dr. Ben Edwards. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
How are you?
Doing well.
Good to see you back. Oh, I'm doing great.
Survived the Super Bowl night.
Yeah, I did. Did you enjoy that game? Did you watch it?
Yes, we did. We had a big family gathering.
Happy for Pat Mahomes there?
Yeah, it's good to see old Pat representing
Texas Tech.
Mm-hmm. He did good. My 13-year-old daughter kept saying, "You still think they're going to win, Dad? You still think they're going to win?"
Said,
yeah, they got to get down by at least double digits, and then the game will be ready to come back. That's how they do it. And they did. So congrats to the Chiefs.
Yeah.
And Andy Reid.
It was way past time for old Andy Reid, the most winningest NFL coach in history without a Super Bowl win.
So yeah.
Now he's got one in a ring.
Woo! Good to see.
Okay, so on today's program, what are we going to get into?
Well, it's First Monday, so we've got to see what Morley Robbins has been up to the past month, what nuggets of fascinating medical journal information he's uncovered. Isn't everyone just after the Super Bowl, aren't they just licking their chop to get Morley on the first Monday show and hear the nuggets?
Ah, yeah.
Well, Dr. Ben, I'm gonna pick right up where you are. And what's another name for a football field?
What's another name for a football field, huh?
Yeah. Go back to the early 1900s. What do they used to call the field?
The gridiron.
Gridiron. Yes. Now, how many players are on the field at any one time?
Well, should be 22. 11
and
11.
11 and 11. What is the most important element on the field in order to have a game?
A football. I don't know
ding,
how.
Ding, ding, ding. So a football represents copper.
Oh.
I was about to say, how does copper come into the leather-laced football? But it just represents. It represents.
Just represents, yeah. Right? And in the hands of a quarterback, a lot of good things can happen, right?
Right.
But the most important thing is if you take the copper out of the game, what happens? It stops.
Great
the
analogy.
The players stand around, and they get cold, or they get wet, or they get rusty, or whatever. But that hit me this morning as I was chatting with one of my Starbucks buddies who was blathering on about the game, which I did not watch because I read about it the next day. It must have been a fascinating game. But the point is, everyone's missing the point about football. We have a gridiron. Our body is a gridiron, and we need to have more footballs in order to have action and movement and scores.
Yeah. So let me break that analogy down. The football copper, we've got to have copper available to run this amazing protein called ceruloplasmin. And I've described it in the past. We've described it lots of ways. Decathlete, my favorite, those, the Swiss Army knife, especially that huge Swiss Army knife on steroids. It has like 28 different functions. But that Swiss Army knife is closed and unavailable to do any work if there's no bioavailable copper. So when ceruloplasmin has that copper available, it can open up all those different gadgets on the knife. It becomes ferrooxidase enzyme functioning, and that enzyme does a lot of different things in the body, and that's probably at the heart of the research really that Morley's doing, whether he's looking at MS or spontaneous abortions with women who are miscarrying or whatever, your immune system ability to function, all these different functions in the body. When they're not functioning right, it ends up with symptoms we call a disease. But if you dig down deep enough, it almost always somewhere in there is the football's missing from the football field and everything grinds to a halt. So we could talk about coronavirus and the lack of immune function. Probably there's a lack of a football. We could talk about the spontaneous abortions. Morley sent me some article about these miscarriages and the lack of a football. And then probably my favorite one, nitric oxide, and just because it's near and dear to my heart because of the Nobel Prize being awarded at UT Houston my freshman year in med school there. So lots of different ways we could go, Morley, but how would you like to start? Or something else, if you've discovered something else this past month.
No, I appreciate the clarification because I think it's important for people to realize that it really is that simple. And what I'm coming to learn, again, I've been at this for maybe too many years now, but I'm seeing the game differently. It goes back to that famous interview with Wayne Gretzky. Why are you such a great player? He said, well, I see the game differently. And the sportscaster had the courage to say, please explain what you mean. And he says, I skate to where the puck is going to be. And that's why Wayne Gretzky was such a gifted athlete. He saw the game in a completely different state of time frame, I guess, because he was always skating to the future of the plays. What I think is important for the listeners to realize that what's coming out in the research now, and I've seen this in articles on heart disease, cancer, diabetes, and then the one that I sent you this morning, Dr. Ben, on multiple sclerosis, but it's true for all neurodegeneration. The first and defining event in metabolic breakdown is the slowing of the ability to make energy. So that when the heart muscle cells, cardiomyocytes, or the liver cells, hepatocytes, or the pancreatic cells, they're called ACNR cells, or in the case of multiple sclerosis, they're called oligodendrocytes. Could there be a more complicated word to describe brain function?
Great hangman word.
But all of these different cells need to be making ATP. And in order to make ATP, you've got to have copper in complex 4, and you've got to have magnesium in complex 5. And without those two minerals, your energy production drops off. And what this article that I shared with you this morning was beautifully descriptive of is as the ability to make energy drops, the accumulation of iron in the cell and more importantly in the mitochondria builds. And that's the very flashpoint of what I call metabolic dysfunction. And it happens to all cells across the body. It doesn't matter whether we're talking about toe cells, knee cells, heart cells, kidney cells, brain cells, all cells need to be making energy. And when they stop making energy, that, you know, building on the really powerful work of Jerry Tennant in Dallas, healing is voltage. When the cell can't produce enough energy, well, then it can't produce enough voltage to keep the pathogens at bay.
Right.
What do pathogens respond to? They have a magnetic attraction to a low-energy, low-voltage environment, which brings us full circle to the concerns that the listeners have about the virus that's spreading around the world. It's just, again, if you have bioavailable copper and you are taking the steps to keep your iron at bay and keep it circulating, your immune system knows exactly what to do when exposed to that virus.
Yeah.
The body is imminently designed, going all the way back to the beginning, to protect the body against too much oxygen and too much iron. And that's what the ceruloplasmin protein is all about.
Yeah. Well, and you said as if copper's not in complex 4, mag's not in complex 5, you can't make energy. Then iron comes in. I want to remind everybody, one of the functions of that pocket knife, that Swiss Army knife, is to keep iron in proper circulation, in proper recycling mode, in storage, in the right places. So that's one of the functions you lose when that football's gone, when copper's not available, when copper's kicked out. That's one of the functions you lose. So iron can creep in, and iron reacts in a very negative manner with the exhaust and actually creates more exhaust. But there's this excess iron, remember, because of the iron fortification of our food. We need about a milligram a day, and we're getting way more than that, the standard American is. So all these diseases that we're seeing a huge escalation of really over the past 60, 70, 80 years post-World War II, we always talk about this huge escalation, and especially over the past couple decades, that's not your genes. There's something environmental that's changed, and there's a lot environmentally that's changed. But this key foundational piece of excess iron in the diet, and then, of course, we can talk about all the other things you add on top of that, but that's a foundational key point. When you have so much extra iron, you could probably still handle that to a degree if you had a football in every ceruloplasmin protein out there, and this pocket knife could fully function like it was supposed to. You could probably handle some of this excess iron, but we're in a state where this excess iron is just killing us, and our pocket knives are all shut.
So here's what, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say one of those manifestations is coronavirus eruption. Your immune system can't do what it's supposed to do, but go ahead, Maury.
Yeah, no, the thing, what I stumbled upon, and I mean literally stumbled upon, I don't know how I found this article. Sometimes the universe just steps in and says, here, let me thump you in the nose with this one. But there's a scientist, he was at the University of Utah back in 2004, 2006. He's now at Auburn University. His name is Paul Cobine, C-O-B-I-N-E. Let's all say a prayer for Paul Cobine, because he's a very courageous researcher. But what they were studying was the copper content of the mitochondria of yeast cells. So, again, there's this hierarchy in the animal world, and yeast are at one end, and I'd like to think that humans are at the other, right? That we have a more evolved metabolism. And because of that, I read an article this morning that basically says our consciousness is a function of our metabolism. The more efficient, the more evolved your metabolism, the more conscious you are as a being. Well, I think that the consciousness of a human would be different than the consciousness of a yeast. That's my bias. Mine may be wrong. But in any event, there are scientists who will tell you with a straight face that we have one football in each cell of our body. We have one copper atom in each cell. We have 100 trillion cells, so that's a lot of copper, right? And when I first saw that, I thought, wow, that just seems light. And see, there's a lot of copper enzymes that I'm aware of. It just didn't seem that one football was going to be enough. So along comes this research by Paul Cobine, studying yeast cells, and what did they learn? That there's 50,000 atoms of copper in one mitochondria of a yeast cell. Well, I almost fell out of my chair when I saw that, which would suggest, if we apply this model of evolved species, we should have more copper atoms in our mitochondria than a yeast cell. Now, again, Dr. Ben, you may have a different perspective because of your medical and clinical training, but I'm applying the research that I've read to this model, and it just seems plausible that we would have more copper. Well, then we come fast forward to 2018, 2019, and now 2020, is there's this incredible acceleration of research about what's called the labile iron pool. And for the listeners, labile does not mean free, which we think it does. It means reactive, highly toxic, because when iron is not being chaperoned or bound to a protein properly, it's going to cause chaos. So what Paul Cobine was introducing in 2004 and 2006 was what was termed the mitochondrial copper pool. And then we come forward 15 years, and the focus is now on mitochondrial iron pools. And I think what is happening, again, simple mind, using my thumb to measure an inch, because of the programs of iron fortification and all of the other things that we've talked about, there's been this complete mismatch between copper and iron. And we are what is the number one reason why people go see their doctor? Fatigue. I'm tired. And it's the number one symptom that motivates people to go see their doctor. And again, back to our earlier comments, copper and magnesium are at the heart of that process of making energy. And what will disrupt that process faster than anything on the planet? It's iron. And there's studies of the impact of excess iron where there's a 40% loss, a 60% loss, an 80% loss, and a 96% loss of energy production in iron toxic mitochondria. And what determines whether it's 60 to 96% is the amount of iron that's allowed to get into the mitochondria. So I think the challenge is getting over the mind-numbing post-geritol programming that has tried to convince us that we're all anemic and that we're all copper toxic. And what we have done in the course of these conversations is try to flip that programming into a statement of truth, which is, truth be known, we are swimming in iron in our cells, doesn't show up in the blood test, because we lack adequate bioavailable copper. So I think the fact that Paul Cobain pulled the curtain back to reveal how much copper is in a yeast mitochondria, I think begins to rattle the cage of what's really going on. And this past week, I had the pleasure of talking to two distinct internationally known copper experts. I'm not going to name them by name, but they are both distinguished in their own right. They've both published hundreds and hundreds of articles. And I asked each one of them point blank, how many copper atoms are in human mitochondria? What was their answer?
Too many to count.
They had no idea. They had no idea. They didn't know who Paul Cobain was. They didn't in any way suggest that there would be a relationship between copper in a yeast cell versus copper in a human cell. And I was absolutely devastated by their lack of awareness. And at the end of the day, what I'm coming to conclude is that the mitochondria is a copper-driven organelle, absolutely paramount importance. And the question that has me, I don't lose sleep at night, thank heavens, knock on wood, but the question that has me absolutely captivated is who or what is regulating the activity of the mitochondria in all 100 trillion cells. There's some intelligence behind the activity of those little bacteria in our cells. And I'm absolutely fascinated by what's the coordinating mechanism in the human body. There's a genius there somewhere. I don't know who it is. We could argue that might be the hypothalamus or some other part of the brain, but I find it fascinating that these little energy furnaces are really, those are the brains of the cell. They are determining how much energy are we going to make? Are we going to end the cell at this point? Are we going to be, it determines the whole dynamic of cholesterol metabolism in the cell. It determines what happens to hormones in the cell. I mean, the power of the mitochondria is vastly more complicated than just spitting out ATP. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the very epicenter of where the crisis is in our bodies, is if we can't produce energy, as Jerry Tennant says in his lectures and in his courses, then we are going to invite untoward events. And I think energy production is the prime purpose of our cells, and minerals are the prime requirement, and I think that iron gets in the way.
Yeah. Well, I agree 100%. And I think this is just my thoughts out loud and opinion, that force, basically directing, controlling, instructing the mitochondria, that's where the connection and the crossover is going to be into that emotional and spiritual realm, because we know the impacts of these unresolved emotions on the body. But, you know, we've always said, well, why will the mitochondria get dysfunctional in the myelin sheath of an MS patient instead of getting dysfunctional in the heart and causing a heart attack, or in the colon and causing Crohn's, or in the whatever? You know, the different body parts. Why does this mitochondrial dysfunction end up in a certain body part? And I think there's going to be some relationship with that unresolved emotional conflict. And it goes back to even the traditional Chinese medicine, the acupuncture meridians, and the different emotions that are associated with different organs. And there's something there that I think is going to have a direct relationship with those mitochondria and the lack of functionality that leads to these diseases. One other comment is these reactive oxygen species, part of the exhaust. This is a fascinating thing for me, is this: the mitochondria is so intricate, so complicated and complex and so cool, and so many different functions and things happening from that, as you've mentioned. But some of that exhaust, they're communicating molecules. They're reactive oxygen species that need cleaned up. You need your antioxidant enzymes to come in there and neutralize them. But in that little millisecond of time, there's actually some communication going on with these molecules, one of which we're going to talk about after we get back from our break here in a sec, the nitric oxide molecule. That's a communicating molecule, and it can be beneficial, but it needs to be dealt with. It needs to be handled the right way and produced the right way and then degraded the right way. And so, but that's such a cool factor for me, is that this exhaust, the bad stuff, quote unquote, can actually have some good and beneficial effect before it goes and gets cleaned up. But remember, to clean up the exhaust, these reactive oxygen species, you got to have the antioxidant enzymes. So as Morley just said, minerals are needed to make this energy. Minerals are also needed to clear the exhaust. And then he said iron disrupts that energy production. Well, iron also disrupts the clearing of the exhaust. Fascinating stuff. We will be back.
Well said. Well said.
Thank you. We will be back to talk more. We're with Morley Robbins today on our first Monday of the month. RCP123.org is his website, veritasmedical.com. Also, Veritas Wellness on YouTube. You can check us out there and all our archive shows on the webpage. But stick with us. We'll be back with another half hour of fascinating insights with Morley Robbins.
Welcome back into You're the Cure right here on AM 580, 20 minutes now before top of the hour. Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, right here on the program, along with Morley Robbins here on the first Monday of the show. And right back at it, Dr. Edwards.
All right. Thank you, Wade. We are back at it with Morley Robbins today, and we're going to jump right back into this reactive oxygen species signaling molecules that I mentioned before the break. I want to tell a quick story because it just highlights what I always talk about: treating a symptom versus treating the root cause. And if you choose to treat a symptom, just understand and have informed consent when electing that mode of therapy, there's going to be unintended consequences of just treating a symptom. If you're not going to fix the thing that's causing the light on the dashboard to go off, then you expect that vehicle to break down at some point. If you're not going to get to the source of the smoke in your room, instead of just turning your smoke detector off or taking the battery out of it so it quits chirping at you, that's the symptom. If you're not going to get to the source of the fire, expect an unintended consequence. Your house is going to burn down. It seems simple and obvious, but in the human body, it's the same way. There are these symptoms that come, and there's a root cause to them, and you can try to address the root cause and fix it, and the symptom will go away by itself, or you can treat that symptom. And high blood pressure is one of those symptoms. High blood pressure, hypertension, is not a disease. It's a symptom, as pretty much all these quote-unquote diseases are, whether it's diabetes or heart disease or whatever. These are symptoms. We call them diseases, and a disease label is just a label that categorizes all these symptoms. So hypertension, real quick, back to 1998, I was a freshman at UT Houston Medical School, and they threw a big party for one of the faculty members, Dr. Murad, because he won the Nobel Prize. And he won that prize for his part in identifying this molecule called nitric oxide. They had known there was some mysterious molecule that helped to dilate the blood vessels. And when you dilate blood vessels, your blood pressure drops. But nobody knew what this molecule was until he and some others together, they figured it out. And it's nitric oxide, got the Nobel Prize. Well, one of his students, Dr. Nathan Bryan, continued to study nitric oxide, and he tried to figure out what can help the body to produce nitric oxide so that you can lower blood pressure. It also helps with erectile dysfunction because that's the same perfusion issue, and it potentially could help with coronary artery disease from a perfusion standpoint, dilate those constricted arteries. So anyways, Nathan Bryan figured out a blend of vegetables, mostly the greens, but also beet. So beetroot powder and arugula and kale, and there's a whole list, and he ranked them in order of greatest impact to least impact. And then he made a supplement, basically. He juiced these vegetables and evaporated the water off and got the powder and put it into a tablet, and he sold it as a supplement. Wrote a book about it, gives lectures about it. There's studies that show this product, nitric oxide supplement, will decrease blood pressure, etc. He actually got hired by a pharmaceutical company, moved, I believe, to Boston, and worked for them for a number of years, 6 or 7 years, to try to come up with a man-made version, a chemical man-made version of this supplement that was full of natural plant products. And he could not do it. He could not figure out a chemical man-made version. So, and if he had, it would have been a blockbuster drug for hypertension and erectile dysfunction. But he couldn't, so he went back home to Houston and just continued to work on and develop and promote the supplement. And he's continued to work on nitric oxide. But here's where I'm going with this. Well, number one, if most pharmaceutical drugs are based in a natural plant molecule, and they do a little one chemical switch, because you can't put a patent on a naturally occurring plant compound, they have to alter that compound in some way, and then they can put a patent on it. So that's point number one. Most of these drugs are actually from plants, and they're tweaked, and therefore there's potential side effects, obviously. But even with the natural compounds, they're natural and less side effects. But the question is, what happens when you artificially induce nitric oxide production with a supplement? Yeah, it could temporarily lower the blood pressure, but what are the unintended consequences of just that nitric oxide? But also, what's the unintended consequence of not dealing with the root cause of what caused the nitric oxide to become dysfunctional in the first place? Why would you have to artificially induce nitric oxide with a drug or a supplement? What's impeding the body's natural, orchestrated, beautifully balanced way to both manufacture nitric oxide and also to break it down? Because it's this beautiful back and forth and tug of war and yin and yang and waxing and waning and this balance, this dance, this orchestrated design. And when we get in there and try to, in our own human perspective, try to get in there and monkey with it, try to artificially start manipulating these biochemical reactions that we barely understand a fraction of. I mean, we just figured out what this molecule even was. Now we're going to go in there and try to manipulate it. We don't have the first clue about what the unintended consequences would be, in my opinion. I would submit to everybody to consider. But then Morley sends me a couple articles this month on that very topic of nitric oxide and too much of it and what it can do and if it's unregulated, not balanced right, and where does it come from anyways, and how does this whole copper iron thing impact it? So a little bit of a side story there, Morley, but that can set the stage for you sharing with us what you discovered in those articles that you sent me about nitric oxide.
No, I think it's a really important context. And the most important word that you used is regulation. We're trained to think in high-low terms. When you have high blood pressure, you have low vitamin D or whatever the focus is du jour, but that's not how the body works. The body works on a bell-shaped curve. know, we have this bell-shaped curve that in the middle is the optimal expression of some metabolite, some nutrient, some enzyme function. And the body does not work off of high-low. It works off of, well, where am I on the spectrum of activity? And the really important part about nitric oxide is that it is naturally produced inside the body. There's actually three different forms of it. There's eNOS, nNOS, and iNOS. Well, eNOS is endothelial nitric oxide synthase. nNOS is neuronal, up in the brain, neuronal nitric oxide synthase. But iNOS is called inducible. What I've learned over the years is that when they use the little small letter I in front of something, they'll tell you it means inducible, what's usually inducing it is iron. Iron is triggering that mechanism. And what's really important is that this nitric oxide, as you said before the break, it's a signaling molecule. It's saying it's a feedback mechanism. Excuse me, how's the process going? Well, we've got a buildup of XYZ, and in this case, it's a buildup of nitric oxide. But what it does is it completely inhibits the energy cycle in complex four. If nitric oxide starts to build inside the mitochondria, the ability to make energy begins to falter. And it's very eloquently written about in the literature. And what prevents that from happening is bioavailable copper, is the Swiss Army knife, you know, back to ferrooxidase, back to these different copper enzymes, that what it basically does is it turns that nitric oxide into nitrite, which is a completely different molecule, has completely different function, and doesn't disrupt the energy flow. And so someone who has, quote, high blood pressure and takes nitric oxide supplements, and they're sold to Jerry Tennant sells them. It's a key part of one of his components of his protocol. But if you don't have bioavailable copper to regulate that nitric oxide, you're going to have an energy crisis inside the cells. And that's the part that's missing, is that the body is in constant regulation. In the article that I shared with you this morning about multiple sclerosis, they were talking about iron metabolism and then iron metabolism regulation. Well, iron metabolism is just focusing on the iron itself. Iron metabolism regulation means the copper enzymes are in play, whether they be the energy enzymes or the antioxidant enzymes or the enzymes that are needed to control the activity of iron. All of those are copper dependent. But in that article about MS, they didn't make it that clear. To a trained reader like myself, as soon as I saw what they were doing about chelating copper out of the cells, I knew exactly what they were doing. But to the average person who might read that, they don't think there's a distinction between iron metabolism and iron metabolism regulation. As soon as you add the word regulation, the whole function of the cell changes, because then we're back into the activity of copper, bioavailable copper, to regulate the cell's ability to work with oxygen. And what also happens with a buildup of nitric oxide is it will interact with another very powerful biomolecule called the hydroxyl radical. We've talked about it on several shows, but it's considered the most destructive biomolecule on the planet. And when the OH of the hydroxyl radical mixes with the NO of nitric oxide, it's referred to as oh no, O-N-O-O. Oh no, we got a problem on our hands. And it's called peroxynitrite. technical term, but just between us folks on this radio show, it's oh no. It's a very destructive free radical that has downstream effect on energy production and a lot of metabolic pathways. Again, the average person doesn't know about oh no. But it's important for people to understand that what will stop the oh no formation is bioavailable copper, because it's regulating nitric oxide. It's preventing the hydroxyl radical. What's the most important way to stop the hydroxyl radical? Is to have the ferrooxidase enzyme, the Swiss Army knife, nearby to stop that. And Mother Nature has endowed us with this natural ability as long as we stay true to the root cause approach, to understanding the importance of having minerals, having vitamin complexes, and having nutrient-dense food. That is what allows us to maintain the right balance between copper and iron and their interaction with the oxygen molecule. That's what the whole focus is all about, is making sure we're not agitating the oxygen so that it becomes a signaling molecule of, hey, we got some buildup of exhaust, we got to take care of it. And that's when the dysfunction begins to build inside the cells, regardless of where they are in the body.
Right. I want to remind everybody, the football is the copper that allows the Swiss Army knife to open and work. That copper is found in whole food vitamin C, because you want bioavailable copper, not just copper off the shelf from some supplement store. Whole food vitamin C has copper in it, in organ meats. So desiccated beef liver in a capsule, or better yet, eat some organ meats. And people think about iron in liver, but there's other organ meats besides liver too, but there's a lot of copper in that liver and the other organ meats, especially the heart. And we're just not eating that anymore. So we're missing that. And we can't forget retinol, which is animal-based forms of vitamin A, not beta-carotene from plants, but retinol from animals, cod liver oil being probably the biggest supplemental source of it. That vitamin A helps load the copper into the Swiss Army knife. So you've got to have that whole food, a nourishing traditions type of diet, the ancestral type of eating, Weston A. Price type of eating, to get these things. And remember also, synthetic forms of vitamin C called ascorbic acid, which is pretty much all vitamin C on the market, and synthetic forms of vitamin D supplementation, which pretty much every doctor is recommending. In fact, I had a question last week from one of our followers in social media, I think, or maybe as a patient. Why don't y'all recommend vitamin D? Everybody else does. This is why. This is going to be my answer when I answer that. Is because synthetic vitamin D kicks the football off the field onto the sideline. Vitamin C, ascorbic acid, synthetic, it does the same thing. High fructose corn syrup, all these impact the football in a negative way. And that's why, that's one reason I wouldn't recommend those synthetic forms of those nutrients. Morley, I think we've got time. And I know this might get a little more technical, but I think it'd be worth mentioning, because we see this a lot. We have a lot of young ladies come in who either can't get pregnant, they're infertile, and there's lots of reasons for that potentially, but dive deep down. The common denominator in most of it is probably going to come down to the Swiss Army knife's closed. The football's off the field. So right. Miscarriages, infertility, spontaneous abortion. You sent me some stuff this month, and we've got probably, I don't know, 7 or 8 minutes, but go ahead and dive into that if you don't mind.
Sure. I was first piqued about this whole area when one of my clients revealed that she had had 7 miscarriages and 2 ectopic pregnancies, which is, that's a very notable track record. And she was going to a functional doctor in London and was being treated for copper toxicity. Well, that's when I knew there was a problem with that strategy. So I started to dive into it in a deeper level. And over the last 4 months since we had our first consult, I've periodically sent her articles that delve into the role that bioavailable copper plays in the energy production of the oocytes, the cells that actually make the eggs, the importance of copper in just the vitality of the whole implantation process. I mean, there's so many different levels of impact. But I think the bombshell was just a few days ago. And again, sometimes I don't know how I find these articles. But I'm really focusing on oxygen and coming to realize that the neurotransmitters,
serotonin.
There's a classification of neurotransmitters that are called catecholamines, mm-hmm. that would be dopamine, mm-hmm. and noradrenaline and adrenaline. But then these other neurotransmitters, like serotonin, very, very important. But all of these chemicals have a relationship to oxygen. And what they're really trying to do is restore energy balance in the face of oxidative stress, which is absolutely fascinating. Back to what is oxidative stress? It's the signaling molecules are telling us we've got a buildup of exhaust. That's really what it's saying. And so in this particular study, they were really looking at the dynamics, and it's important to understand time frame. These studies were back in the 1960s. Keep in mind that the ceruloplasmin protein wasn't identified until 1948. We're talking about 15 years after the discovery of this protein. You can imagine the explosion of research trying to understand, well, what is this ceruloplasmin thingy doing? What's this Swiss Army knife really doing inside the body? And what they were revealing in the study of spontaneous abortion, which is another way of saying miscarriage, is that there's a dynamic where I think we've got a chicken and egg going, is that the fetus is not able to thrive and therefore the body responds with literally a miscarriage, or is it that the environment does not support the viability of the fetus and therefore triggers the mechanism? I think that we could have that debate for a couple days. But the point is, what they were learning back in the 1960s is that one of the roles of the Swiss Army knife was to keep serotonin in check, not allow its production to rise beyond a regulated level, because when serotonin does rise, it triggers a whole chain reaction of events that lead to the miscarriage. And in fact, serotonin's every hormone or every neurotransmitter of that significance has a job. Well, serotonin's job is to instill very powerful contractions, especially in the uterine wall. And so what the body's trying to do in a pregnant woman's body, what the body's trying to do is make sure that the fetus is able to go to term. But if there's some disruption of energy production and the placenta and the uterine tissue is not able to generate enough energy, well, then that's going to send up a major signal of distress. And the distress signal is all revolving around oxidative stress. And so this study was really looking at the placenta, and the dynamic was between the amount of active, usable ceruloplasmin versus serotonin. And what they learned was that it was the loss of bioavailable copper that allowed the serotonin to build up, which then led to the miscarriage. And the conclusion of a couple of the studies was to the effect of, gee, it might be really helpful to measure copper status and ceruloplasmin status in a pregnant woman's body so we have a sense of how the pregnancy is progressing. And what they learned was that just prior to a spontaneous abortion, there was a drop in copper level and a drop in ceruloplasmin activity level, which would suggest that there's an energy crisis in the tissue, and that in a normal, healthy pregnant woman's body, there's a massive explosion in copper and ceruloplasmin activity to monitor the process of the developing fetus. It's a very highly energy-dependent process, as we can imagine. Well, anytime you've got a lot of energy, you're going to have a lot of exhaust. So the body has to be able to neutralize that. But what they learned from these studies in the 60s is that there is this loss of copper, loss of ceruloplasmin, and then right on the heels of it, the rise of serotonin, and then the spontaneous abortion. And so it just became a very revealing expose of yet another responsibility that the Swiss Army knife has to keep our body in balance, keep it in regulation, and keep things on an even keel. I think the added piece of research that I came across was to learn that this process of building serotonin, especially in the placenta and in the overall cavity of the womb, leads to high serotonin levels for the fetus, and it becomes a priming mechanism for autism. I'd never connected those dots, but there were several articles that I came across that began to say that this is almost a precondition for autism in the event that that actually surfaces. So this whole dynamic between serotonin and bioavailable copper becomes a very powerful place marker for understanding the health of the pregnant woman's body and the health of the pregnancy overall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fascinating. And I hope the listeners are starting to see and understand, if you haven't already understood, the reason I'm so interested and so latched on and dialed in to this whole mineral thing and the copper iron regulation and metabolism and that dance that's played. Because wherever you look, whether it's miscarriages to hypertension to diabetes to the MS, all these quote-unquote diseases, you can see this. If you go and look and go deep enough, you'll see this common thread, mineral dysregulation. The Swiss Army knife is closed and not functioning. The bioavailable copper has been kicked out, and it causes this energy exhaust imbalance, and it leads to all these symptoms that, again, we call disease.
I came across a very important study from 2005 by a Dr. Wallace. I'm not sure I've sent that to you. It's like 50 pages, so I figure there's a limit to your patience with me.
Yeah, I don't look at stuff over 48 pages.
All right, I'll leave the last two pages out. But the important thing is his first sentence, I think, is one of the most powerful that I've ever read. He said, one of the weaknesses of modern medicine is a failure to understand energy deficiency. And I think it's not that medicine is wrong. It's just medicine is not complete. It doesn't have the full understanding of what's taking place. And as you've always said, and I think beautifully said, it leads to unintended consequences because we have this narrow understanding and we're not putting it in the context of energy. I think we're missing the mark on so many of these conditions.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And I had a patient tell me last week that they were at the hospital for some reason. I won't dive into, but well, she has cancer. But anyways, she was seeing the heart doctor for some reason. And she told me, and I chuckled, she had told the doctor at the hospital, the cardiologist, that she was one of our patients. And he said, oh, well, we don't really recognize that type of medicine. And I laughed and told the patient, well, of course not. They don't recognize this type of medicine. I wouldn't have either because we aren't trained in this type of medicine. So you can't recognize something you're not trained in as a physician. But then my next statement was, obviously, we need an alternative, or we need a deeper understanding, or we need a more complete and thorough education. We need to bridge some gaps in our lack of knowledge in conventional medicine, because just look at the outcomes. Our outcomes are horrible, and I won't go down that path. We've talked about that plenty, but we get the worst outcomes, I'll just say that, and pay the most money. So that incomplete lack of knowledge, incomplete education, and lack of deeper understanding, and the decision to just treat symptoms, which, you know, granted, 98% of the U.S. population probably is not going to change their diet and their lifestyle. But, hey, at least they need to be educated and know the option so they can have informed consent and they can willfully choose to treat a symptom and have the decreased quality of life and bankruptcy that may come with that. They need to be fully informed before they choose that path, because someone chose it for them and decided to take this option of dealing with root causes off the table. So that's why we're doing the show today, and that's why it's called You're the Cure, because you're responsible for your health. You're responsible to get out there and learn more and get educated and get informed, because your doctors didn't have the full, deeper education, and they don't even know that they didn't have that. So if you don't want to be a standard American, you don't want to be a standard American statistic, healthcare statistic. Morley mentioned autism that was non-existent in the medical literature in the before 1930, and now it's, you know, skyrocketed. That's just one example. If you don't want your kids and grandkids to be a statistic, then continue to learn and continue to take responsibility and change your diet and your lifestyle. And Morley and I will continue to bring the information and education and the science that helps support you and helps bridge those knowledge gaps so that you can be motivated to go do that, because the world's going to be telling you to take vitamin D, and amongst other things. So thanks, Morley, for helping us understand and bringing that science to it, bringing the education. It's a key component to helping West Texans and people outside of West Texas, I know, listen, all across the country and even the world. So thanks for all you're doing to help educate us.
Happy to do it. And thanks again, as always, for the opportunity to have these conversations.
You're welcome. Look forward to next month.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, that's Morley Robbins, rcp123.org. And this has been Edwards, veritasmedical.com. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week.